Hey there, Nutters. Great show for you today. The sun actually came up despite David Gabriel George's picking Tennessee. Mark Porter and I will put that in context for you. Take a look at an NFL legacy. How about you hit that subscribe button for us? Good morning, Bucknutters. It is Thursday, July 23rd, 2026. I am Dan Rubin. This is the Bucknuts Morning Five and Change. Joined today by Mark Porter. Garrick Hodge scheduled his vacation well in advance, and I have jested that he did it in a clairvoyant fashion, considering the fact this is the day after David Gabriel George's long recruitment ending with Tennessee getting the W, but
if you think he didn't have inside information months ago on this, we're wrong. So he's truly an insider.
He is just letting Mark and I take all the bullets today. But as you will see, and as you can tell from the headline, the sky remains intact is the lead. If you were coming to this site today to hear us kvetch about the sky is falling and Ohio State has no chance to be as good as they would have been, you will not get that. Keep in mind, this site is called Bucknuts, okay? So, truth in advertising to some extent there. Also, if you followed Mark and myself, and Garrick for that matter, throughout this, yes, I think we've given DGG the right amount of praise and coverage because he was the apple of their eye. At the same time, you know how we feel about recruiting and running back recruiting, so you may ask yourself, is Dan going to start the show with some kind of information to make you feel better? Yes, he is. And here we go. Ohio State right now is ranked number 7 in the top 247 recruiting rankings. So there are 6 teams ahead of them. Texas A&M, Oregon, Notre Dame, Texas, Miami, and Oklahoma. Let's throw Tennessee in there, although I think they're, even with getting David Gabriel George's, they are not in the top 11 or 12. Mark, trivia. How long has it been since Ohio State won the national championship?
Not long ago. Not long enough where you can't remember.
So it was what? Not this past season, the season before.
Yep.
Okay. And so if you combine those teams, Texas A&M, Oregon, Notre Dame, Texas, Miami, Oklahoma, and we're going to throw Tennessee in there. And this is under the auspices of, do people actually commit to win the national championship? Because we say here, oh, if you want to come to Ohio State, you have a better chance to win the national championship. And some people think that's lip service. Total combined years since those teams won the title. Just a reminder, Ohio State won it 2 years ago and then won it 10 years before that. By my math, you got about, what, a 30% chance, 35% chance if you sign at Ohio State of winning the national championship. That's loose math, by the way. Mark and I are no mathematicians. Someone could get that in the comments for me. Oregon has never won the national championship. They've been around for 132 years. Texas A&M, here are the years it's been since they won the national championship in order. Texas A&M, 87. Notre Dame, 38. Texas, 21. Miami, 25. Oklahoma, 26. Tennessee, 28. Combined total, 357 years. The teams rated ahead of Ohio State plus Tennessee have not won a national championship in a combined 357 years. Okay. At Ohio State, if you commit here, there's about a 30% chance you win a national championship. I just gave you the stats. So when we say, hey, if you come to Ohio State, you really are coming here to win a national championship or have a chance at it, that's an accurate statement. And if you go to those other schools, you have to ask yourself, is it? Especially Oregon, which the statistics even came out with Oregon and not Oregon, because Oregon's never won. All right. Mark, please let everyone know why the sky remains intact, despite the fact that, and we agree, this was the best running back in the class, and Carlos Laughlin spent the better part of 2 years recruiting him.
Yeah, even though it's Bucknuts, I am scouting Ohio, so I try to have a little bit more of an even-tempered keel, maybe a scout's keel, maybe I don't get as emotional or attached, and, you know, just the facts, man. That's all I'm here to do. You're right. This David Gabriel George was the man. You know, like, he had a highlight film. He's a sprinter. We brought out all the big-time comparisons. We talked about why a factor back or a guy would be a force multiplier at that position and how he can make everybody better. Okay. We also pointed out that the Travion Henderson and Quidshon Jenkins backfield was the one that brought us to a national championship. If you look at the NFL, even when you have a Jahmyr Gibbs, you're bringing in an Isaiah Pacheco to be his caddy or a David Montgomery to be his caddy. If you're Bijan Robinson, you have Brian Robinson, the Niners backup running back this year, to be your caddy. Everybody has a caddy, okay? Everybody's running the two-man show in the NFL and down. So that's kind of where I have been, and I've always – I think I'm famous for saying probably 20 times on this podcast, fantasy footballers know. On the couch, a guy could be sitting, and 3 weeks later is in the NFL running for 100 yards and scoring touchdowns, okay? It's a position where there's a lot of great athletes. We wanted this guy. We will survive. He wasn't going to be on the team this year anyway, so it doesn't affect anything this year. Next year, he was going to be a 50-50 guy with someone probably as a freshman, whether it was Jackson or Legend Bay or if it was 60-40. I really believe that I think there is going to be a two-headed monster in a lot of these backfields. Now, this monster would have been maybe 80-20. You know, he might have taken a bigger bulk. But the sky is not falling. And you did a good job of pointing out why you want to come to Ohio State. And I couldn't help, Dan, but be cynical, Mark Porter, while you were talking and saying, what does that 30% chance of playing for a national championship or winning a national championship, or the fact that you're going to be in the Final Four or Final Eight every year, or pretty rock solid in those, you know, evaluations where other teams maybe a lot more variance, what is that worth in a dollar amount? Because that's where we're at. I mean, Dan and I, if you went back to our initial podcast like 4 years ago, when we started 5 years ago, and it was Bill Kerlick or whatever, I was probably more cynical to Dan, and Dan was like, okay, they're still going to come for the coaching and the, you know, the facilities and all that stuff. And you could just see it over time, you know, the footing of that stuff just not holding, where the almighty dollar bill. Okay. And today might be the pinnacle. As I was watching this yesterday, I'm like, this may be the pinnacle dollar bill player right here. Where,
the ultimate anecdotal example.
There you go. I was looking for, I didn't have the vocabulary. Anecdotal was the perfect word, Dan. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, this is going to be the story that's told, that, hey, Ohio State had the better situation and had plenty of money on the table. And this simply came down to more money. And I think that we have to learn that lesson that, yeah, that the days of everyone loving Ohio State as much as we do, as much as the Ohio State coaches and fans and the kids from Ohio do, we don't know what that's worth anymore. And it's worth, and it's a varying number depending on the player. Some people,
correct. That's the key, though. That's the key. It matters more to some people. Like Caleb Downs, I'm sorry, he was not going to Georgia Tech. No offense.
I was just going to go there. And Dan has already said, hey, if we can get in on NFL player sons, some of these other players were, that extra $500,000 may not just totally sway these guys. I think that's a correct beat or path to be on. I think there's something to that. Notre Dame doing a bunch of that, maybe to save themselves a bunch of money in NIL. But yeah, we will live. And I think you're going to see a Legend Bay Bo Jackson, Isaiah West Bo Jackson backfield. I think we have talent in the room. There's other guys, Turbo Rogers, that can do things. It just isn't going to be one guy. Now, we have that extra money. Let's see where it goes over the next couple months to other players, other positions. Do we hold it and wait for the offseason to retain players? But there's a nice bank account somewhere sitting with some money in escrow that you get to put back into your coffers. And I want to say hats off to David Gabriel George. I mean, he's a heck of a player. He did right by himself and his family. You can't begrudge a player. If any of us were in that situation, if Tennessee offers me double what Bucknuts is going, I'll be wearing an orange hat tomorrow, and Dan would probably be sitting right next to me. And we wouldn't like it on the drive down there. We'd be like, you know. But we all have families, and we're all trying to do what's best for our futures and our families. And I think this isn't, you know, like it used to be with it's just a scholarship in your education. These kids are getting life-changing money that if they put in the bank, and this is another thing I told someone. Someone gives you money at 18 or 21 years old and you put it in the bank, it's different than you giving me and Dan $1 million at 53 or at 58 or at 60. Yeah, you know, whatever. I mean, like, when you're at retirement, it's hard to get that money to double, you know, before you retire. When you're 18, by the time you're 35, that money is so much more valuable to your life. You know, if you know about the doubling of money every 7-10 years or investing or whatever. So yeah, give me $1 million at 18 or $1 million at 53. Those aren't even the same amounts, you know, if you're going to live that long. So, okay. I've backpedaled a little bit for everybody, you know, and I'm trying to, but this is the other thing I've said. If you follow me, I don't ride this roller coaster. I know Ohio State will be fine. I know there's going to be a running back in college football that absolutely lights it up this year. That's a freshman or sophomore. And if we are not 100% satisfied with Bo Jackson and Legend Bay by the end of the year, that person will be an option. So rest assured that, you know, the sky did not fall.
True. And keep in mind, and this is damage control, but I think accurate, running back, not the most difficult position to replace. You can wait late in the process. If people remember, Mayan Williams was committed to Iowa State well into the process. Ohio State was able to go and grab him. There are plenty of backs out there, not the transcendent every down back that David Gabriel Georges is, but Ohio State is blessed and they will be able to, you know, make up for that in other spots. Skill players is not an issue at Ohio State. Let's just deal with that.
Put up the Tyler comment he just right there with this. Problem with his recruitment is it never felt like DGG was making his own, you know, decision. It was his family the whole time. That comment.
Okay.
And here's what I want to point out about that is that's the new era we're in. Is it used to be a scholarship for a player. So family members would say, oh, okay, he's going there to get an education. And that was their input towards the player. Like, hey, this is a great place, great coaches, great facilities, great chance to go to the NFL. You're giving someone $1 million or $2 million. Guess who else is involved in that? Seriously. Guess who else is getting a piece of that pie? Family members. It's going to change their lives. It's not just the school he's going to. If it was the school he's going to, how does that change a family member's lives? What does a family member care if he gets an education from Tennessee or Ohio State? A family member cares when he's getting cut in $50,000 or $100,000 or if that kid or is his son and has a couple million in the bank and he's going to help them pay off their house and get them a new car. So all of a sudden these family members and these uncles, you're right, Tyler, they are making decisions more than ever with more at stake than ever. You know, it's like there's a little devil and an angel over their shoulder where, hey, I'm trying to help this kid out, but I'm like, hey, I'm going to get kicked. You know, I mean, we heard a story about a pastor who was trying to get a little kickback for helping the kid. We have trainers. We have high schools. I have a boarding house nugget I'll save for later. But, yeah, like, yeah, there's these things that are going on with this money that are just in a different time. So I don't think this is just the kid's decision where they go to school. I think from now on you're going to see.
It's never been, too. I mean, yeah. You know, you're – yes.
But they have a vested interest.
No doubt. No doubt. It's changed. What you probably have is now people – breaking into the family circle from outside of it, trying to gerrymander the situation because they see it as a way to make money. We always knew that was going to happen. I want to address this one here. What about the truth about Tennessee now going after DJ Jacobs? Because that was, to me, message board love from Tennessee people thinking now they can just go buy everyone and he's going to change his mind for that. Stay in your place. And for those who are here from Tennessee, because I don't know if you guys know this, there are going to be people who think Tennessee fans, this is their championship. We've already gone over how long it's been since they won one. Beating Ohio State for a recruit is a big deal at these other fan bases. But just know if you're here, we have a no shirt, no shoes, no dice policy. So just like Fast Times for you Tennessee peeps. So don't worry about DJ Jacobs, okay? The idea that Tennessee had some revelation, like, wait a minute, high-level recruits like a lot of money? Let's go after DJ Jacobs now. Let's keep it somewhat grounded in.
You know, the same thing I said, like, maybe getting Legend Bay cost us Jacobs because Tennessee had the money left over and had the hole in their roster. But now that you have David Gabriel Georges, you don't have the resources to keep bringing in these players. I don't know how much money could Tennessee have? And we have all the money we didn't spend on David Gabriel George to kick into Jacobs or whoever you come after. Oh, you're going to come after him? Well, we have a bunch of money to send.
It's not linear like that.
And I don't think it's linear as a good
one. Not dominoes here.
Yeah. But this is good. But in some level, there is a finite number to each team on how much they can go over and above their cap and how much they can keep tapping into rich guys and their fan base. And I mean, I tell you what, I know some guys that own businesses in town and they've confided in me. Hey, I'm a little bit tired of this, you know, getting emails every other day for, hey, we need another. Well, I just gave you for a player. I just gave you this. I just gave you that. It's becoming a never ending political fundraising campaign is pretty much what it is. And you capitalize off the anger. And that's probably what Ohio State should do today. Be like, you know what? Fans, you're angry we didn't get David Gabriel Georges. Donate a little more so it doesn't happen again. You know?
It's not like Ohio State got to the end of their bank account and was rubbing together nickels to
that's a good point.
DGG. It's just a decision they made, and they weren't going above a certain point. It's going to work itself out, people. In terms of who comes next and stuff, we'll discuss that a little bit from an Ohio perspective. But I'm going to let Garrick kind of chew on that and come back next week, and we'll get involved with that a little more. We've told you about some of the other guys they've talked to, Nigel Newkirk in Georgia, the running back at Baton Rouge Catholic, who I called Jadarian Price for some reason. I think his name is Jaden Miles. That's one of those things that I apologize. My brain, once it locks in on the name incorrectly, going to get some Ron Wilson action. All right, let's talk about some of the questions we got. And Tampa OSU, if he's not our best, most devoted Bucknuts listener, he's up there with the Hall of Famers. What's next in terms of running back and what are our chances? I think you're going to see them, like I said, wait a little bit here. The idea that, and this is one of the reasons this is a good question, the idea that they're now geeked to go and add a running back in that spot, I'm not sure that's accurate. I think they were geeked to add him, and then they'll now reassess and go from there. I don't think they're just going to shift the chips to another, you know, bet on red now.
This doesn't have anything to do with it. If this was like, hey, we need this kid to come in and sign today to be a part of this season and you lost them, then I could be like, whoa, hole blown in the roster. They were counting on him for 1,500 yards this year. This like you're saying, they would have been happy to have him a year from now or, you know, add him to the depth chart.
It feels like damage control, but the truth is this. There are kids who have not taken a carry yet since the entire career. They're going to be fantastic. It's fluid. You're talking about 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old kids. Someone's going to blossom here. So Ohio State, and this has been proven, they have done a really good job recently of assessing the senior class. And after three games, getting that tape in there and really making good decisions. So,
I mean, and like
trusting your team here somewhat. Go ahead, Mark.
I don't know why. Like, do you remember like LaDainian Tomlinson and Marshall Faulk? And you said, there will never be another. And so, Eddie George. Oh, there will never. There's Derrick Henry. You know, there's Gibbs. There's Bijan Robinson. There will be more. There will be others. It just, you got to wait and have some patience.
Also, running back, all different shapes and sizes. They can come from any school. It's just different. There's just more of them. That's just a fact. Now, is it realistic to sit here and think they're going to be able to replace David Gabriel Georges with a running back of similar ilk? It is not. It is not. So don't misunderstand us. But that does not mean the barrier of excellence won't be crossed. He's just the force multiplier, right? It's not people, and I get it. It's recruiting, and the site's called Bucknuts, but people view this in extremes. It's not like we're now going to have to start,
like, and this is
whoever at running back.
And I don't have the facts to back this up, but I have the premonition in my head where is running back the position that brings you home a Super Bowl or a national championship? You know, like
at this point, no.
Yeah. Like when you look at every national, you're like, man, they had a tailback that they just turned around and he just, carried him right down the field every drive. It's not that type of game and it's not that type of position anymore. I think at this day and age, it's the most team-oriented sport it's ever been, where defense, parts of the defense, pass rushers. I mean, you could talk about all the different special teams. Like, man, they're all in there at percentages that are pretty equal. There is no like, well, if the running back's 50 or 60% of the team, and if you don't have that guy, so I want to dial back how important that position is to actually what our real goal is, the national championship. So if you were to lose someone throughout the year, losing a left tackle could really screw your season up, or losing a couple tackles, or losing a quarterback. But losing a running back, like I said, they're more plug and play. Zeke was a guy that, there are guys you think can never be replaced, but they are. The NFL finds them again, and you'll find them again.
And just to give you some confidence in your program here, we lost a left tackle and won the national championship. We lost two quarterbacks and won the national championship. So this is not like every other program. We can handle not getting a running back in recruiting. Is it emotional? Have we spent a lot of time watching the video and dreaming of what he would look like? I've done it. Everyone's done it. It's Bucknuts. Nuts. Not Buck Rational Observer. That said, we bring a little bit of rationality here. The second question from Tampa, when will we get a definitive idea, about quarterback in this class? This, of course, is a reference to Brady Edmonds and his dalliance with UCLA. I have not heard a lot about that recently. I get the sense that his last trip to Ohio State was very helpful and that he will be in the class. I'm not basing that on any recent inside information. That's really more of a Garrick vibe thing. But I've not heard, and I have talked to a few people, I've not heard that the momentum is behind that to the same extent that it was before. All right.
You know what? I had more doubt before I saw Brady Edmonds in person this year. Like, off of last year's
evaluation. Maybe they did too, by the way.
Yeah, I think off of last year's camp, you could say, okay, there may be a few boxes he hasn't put the boldest check mark in yet. After watching him throw, I don't know how you could tell a kid who throws it that hard, that accurately, that consistently. And when I say hard, H-A-R-D with all capital letters, he ripped the ball so hard where I told you, my son was there, and he said, Dad, he made me feel like an eighth grader.
He's a big dude now.
Yeah, I mean, he's just and my son has Division I offers, and he's definitely a couple cuts below that, rung. But when you have another kid who's a player honestly saying, Dad, that's a man child out there, and I felt the same way. Like, if I'm Ohio State, I don't know if I can back away from this kid. And so that tells me it would have to be Brady backing away from Ohio State and saying, I want to go to UCLA. And I don't know if he's going to do that just based on, the reports we have of his family and him growing up, loving Ohio State. So, yeah, I think if you don't hear any, no news is good news, and consider him in.
John Riggins. That is a poll by Mike Schaefer. I think the idea is people don't want a running back to come in and upset the locker room. Keep in mind, that's Ohio State's overarching vibe on this whole thing too. They don't want someone to come in and upset the apple cart.
Is it fair to say if we get DGG, we're losing someone else in that backfield? Like you're saying, could you upset the locker room where like some of the guys in there are like, man, Bo was our guy, and now Bo's going to leave because of this or something? Not that I'm saying that's the reason why we're happy he didn't come. I'm not trying to put that sugar on this, but I have a feeling that if DGG shows up next year, West or, Legend or Bo is going for greener pastures and a big payday.
I'll tell you what, there's going to be a good in-depth, story or journalistic enterprise written sometime about these recruitments Ohio State has tussled with Tennessee, because they've been so high profile. David Sanders, Legend Bay, DGG, Chaz Coleman. So it's been really interesting that it's been Tennessee each time. My guess is because it's the Buckeyes, we're going to come out on top, because this is what we do. All right, let's see here. Slim Kid, another great one. Hey, Dan, can you find out if Ryan Day has tasked Cortez Hankton with getting better run blocking out of our wide receivers? Secondly, do we have a field goal kicker that can make a 45-yard field goal? Our special teams have been not good and cost us a couple national championships the last 5 years. They do have the kicker from Baylor, Connor Griffin. He has apparently shown what he can do. We jested when he committed or transferred earlier this offseason. Garrick was like, the Red Sea has parted. They have a big-time kicker. So I do one thing about kickers, proof of concept. How do we feel about them? We'll tell you after the first pressure kick. Now, is it fair to say we have some post-kicker traumatic stress disorder here at Ohio State? You're darn right we do. Talk about costing us a national championship. You could actually make the argument. I don't want to get into that. It hurts too bad. So we will see on that. As for Cortez Hankton, we shall see. I do think that the interception thrown in the game, you know which one, the Miami one, has everyone geeked about wide receiver blocking and such. That is a nuance that we will have to see practiced out. I don't think we can sit here and tell you that they have extra drills set up for wide receiver blocking. I will say this, it does tend to be a reflection of a well-coached football team, how your receivers block downfield, the attention to detail, and the ability to put physical, strong receivers out there who can be a force in the run game. Jeremiah Smith, Chris Henry, they're going to have a chance to be really good blockers. Devin McEwen, Kyle Parker, older fellas, got a little more girth to them. So hopefully they can do it. And Brandon Ennis is a little bulldog, so you know he'll get in there and battle. I don't think that'll be an issue. All right, Mark.
I think that's about desire. I think that's about attitude. I think technique. That's like grit. Yeah. I mean, it's like
I wouldn't say it's run blocking for a running back, pass blocking, but it's one of those things you look for that if it's a tie and they're both great and one guy's will go in there and dig out a tight end for you on a crackback, he's my guy. I think else it's like that Hines Ward mentality, man. You know what I'm saying? That it's representative of a great football.
I don't want to call anyone out. I was at a practice the other day, and a wide receiver got blown up by a DB on a wide receiver screen, and I looked straight at the wide receiver coach to see his reaction. Like, I would have chewed that kid out like no tomorrow, and he didn't say a word. And I'm like, this team's not going to be good at running bubbles because the attitude of the receiver coach is going to be reflected in the willingness of them to block. You know, it's a standard that coach will hold. And so I think Hankton will hold that standard.
That is a very good point and very good insight. Now, you want to see Mark spread his wings, people? Here we go.
Uh-oh.
32 Buckeye Forever asks Mark, and let me get through the whole question here. It's a long one. Does a left-handed quarterback present a lot of problems and need for change for the offense to adjust to? Opposite ball spin, backside protection, the exchange between the running back and the quarterback. Does much of the offense need to change direction? Teams actually tend to be right-handed or left-handed if you do the research. That's just a general statement. The teams that, you know, it's kind of like basketball. If you can dribble right, dribble left, you're harder to defend. Most teams are left or right-handed. It's been my experience that's because that's where the strength of the offensive line tends to be, left or right, but it can change. Does it eat up a lot of time changing to where it would limit some of the play formation install? Is it something that might hinder a kid in his recruitment? Just random thoughts that popped in my head. I know you are knowledgeable about quarterbacks because your son's playing it. Left-handed quarterbacks. Okay. I will say this. I've never been able to get my mind around the way the ball comes out of a left-handed quarterback's hand. It just looks goofy to me. That said, I do think in sports it's an advantage to be left-handed, in some cases, I just speak for basketball off the top of my head. When you go to guard a guy who's left-handed, you're so used to guarding right-handed players that your body takes you right, and he can get you with that little fake and come back left. It's hard. You have to actually train your brain to do it. Mark, the floor is yours.
So I'm left-handed. How about that?
Oh, cool.
I'm ambidextrous.
Well, time out. You're left-handed. You write left?
Yes.
And throw left?
Throw left. Okay. Golf right.
I write left, throw right, kick left. Versatile.
Yeah.
And I don't kick it very far.
I think a lot of people who are left-handed are forced to do things right-handed. Like, I was handed a right-handed set of golf clubs, and they were like, these are your clubs. Figure it out. You know, we're not going to bring you into that world of left-handed golf clubs for the rest of your life. Okay, so standing with some quarterback coaches this summer, and they were talking, and there was a lefty throwing, and one of them said, you know, such and such will never, ever recruit a left-handed quarterback.
Interesting.
You know, and just they just, you know, said he will not deal with it. He will not change his offense. He will not rework a lot of the things for one kid in his room, you know, because you're going to have four or five righties in your room, and then you're going to throw in a lefty. And then, Dan, like you said, you know, the left tackle is the lighter guy who protects the backside where, you know, your back's usually to, and that's your best pass protector. Well, when the lefty's in the game, you know, you don't have that. You have the right tackle being his blindside guy, who's the heavier run blocking guy. So, just on that, you know, unless if your tackles are built like that, you know, you have an offense that's a little different. Some coaches, like you pointed out, Dan, like the changeup because it screws with the defense. The defenses are all kind of built to play against, you know, a right-handed offense, and they match their personnel. I'll say this: if you throw the ball right, people don't know that you're left-handed immediately. It's when you have that awkward motion where it stands out like a sore thumb. You're like, whoa, what was that? And when you see that, you know it's not right. So the Steve Youngs and the guys that have made it in the NFL, few and far between. The Atlanta Falcons just went and got two left-handers, Tua and Penix. And why not? If you're going to keep your offense.
I mean, that makes sense to me. The backup being left-handed.
100%. I was just going to say, because we don't have to deal with all the things you alluded to. Like, hey, every time we come in, we're kind of, remember, Tua's in, remember, the righty's in. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think it should matter. Okay. But you do have to flip your world as a play caller, as a, you know, structuring the offense. And I don't know. I think recruiting, when I heard that this summer, someone having that strong of opinion, it was the first time I ever kind of took a step back and said, wow, that's really a thing, you know? And I doubt this guy would have passed on Michael Vick or some of these other great left-handers, but to the point, to answer the question, there is a little bit of an awkwardness there for some people to change up their thinking and, you know, all okay, instead of all evens, it's going to be all odds, you know, like you're calling odd things all the time. Like it's not 33 ISO, it's now 32 ISO, boot right. And you just, I don't know, I think you're going to be okay.
But. All right, I got two quick ones. One, Steve Young. I once had tickets to a Monday Night Football game. People can research this. It was the Redskins versus the 49ers. And I had never sat in a football game, in a pro game, in the end zone, about 20, 30 rows up, so that you could actually see the play developing behind the quarterback. I am telling you this. I have never exited a sporting event with more respect for someone than Steve Young. When you saw what he was seeing, it was absolute chaos. And he would just drop back there, throw it, and I'd be like, oh, that's intercepted. Boom, someone would come through and catch it and be on the run and stuff like that. Boy, he was incredible. Couldn't beat the Cowboys, but he's incredible. There was another one here I wanted to address that was good.
You're talking about one of my favorite
Boomer. Oh, quick, my Boomer guy. I went to boarding school in New Jersey. And when we got there for preseason football my junior year, the backup quarterback was a blonde, left-handed quarterback, number 7. He was called Boomer day one. No one at that school knows his real name. He was called Boomer forever. When we won the state championship my senior year, he got Boomer on there. A trivia question. Andrew Iscala, where are you these days? Heck of a player. Great baseball player at Jacksonville. All right.
Dan, Dan, share your screen real quick.
I shall. Which one? This one? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. Who is that?
That's a young Mark Porter warming up Steve Young before a game, if you wanted to bring it.
Wow.
Yeah. That's out in San Francisco in the preseason, and Joe Montana was hurt, and so my job was to play catch with Joe Montana and Steve Young. I can tell you, I had to hold the cord, you know, for the offensive coordinator, you know, during the games, and I got to listen to the plays go in, and I got to listen to when Steve Young would come over each, you know, sideline and go over the plays. I tell you what, that is a smart human being. When he came over there, was top of the class, Brigham Young. I mean, but it was my baptism to, like, this isn't a football player on the field. This is a coach that's telling the coaches how to coach. Don't call that again. If you call this again and J.J. Stokes is in, I won't throw it to him. Yeah. You know, like, just the dissertation that came out of his mouth in 3 or 4 minutes over there was just like, I learned more, excuse me, listening to those guys coach.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the highest level of football on the earth. On the earth.
Excuse me. But, yeah, it was eye-opening that, oh, my gosh, like, this isn't like the football I played in high school where a play comes in and everyone just runs it and they come over and they don't talk to the coaches and give them their for a player to give a coach an opinion. Like, I wouldn't go back to my college team and be like, hey, coach, I don't like that Y option anymore. I think you should not run that. I mean,
it also it depends on the coach. I've seen video of Phil Simms coming to the sideline and tell Parcells that and get his head literally bitten straight off the neck.
100%. And that's what I'm saying. Like, to see that respect, and that was something for me. Obviously, I wasn't very old in that photo, but it really gave me an eye opening. Yeah, it was pretty cool back. I really had a cool Forrest Gump like youth of being in the right place at the right time. But when Dan brought up Steve Young, I figured I'd show up this picture. In fact, if you pull up your screen again, there's another one of me and Steve. I'll show you.
I'll say this. You have it there?
There you go. Yeah. Sorry. I think I'm my senior year of high school. Yeah, we were hanging out at a party. But Steve Young is about 6'2", and yeah, I wish I was that kid again.
Yeah. Or he could give you some financial tips. Yeah, but Steve Young's a great player, man. He was great.
I washed his car during camps for him.
People are going to be wondering why you were there. I would say this. Google Youngstown 49ers and the word policy, policy. And then you'll know why. And we digress. All right, Mark, let's finish it off with this. We're going to give you guys some great video to look at here and someone to wet your whistle a little bit. Guy we've talked about, Gage Weddle. First of all, great name. Eric Weddle's son. Eric Weddle, we've talked about this. He was a safety for the Chargers. I believe he played at the University of Utah, played for the Chargers and the Ravens. If he's not going to the Hall of Fame, which he probably isn't, he would get into the Hall of really, really good. So you're talking about a big-time player who had a long career, too. So he was known as both a physical and cerebral player. Mark, Ohio State is very interested. And this goes to my vibe on, if I could build the team 80% NFL legacy, I would. Please, Mark, take it and run with it.
Yeah, Gage Weddle did everything on film you wanted to see out of a safety in this film. You're going to see him lined up in the box and give you that downhill sure tackler. You're going to see him blitzing. And then he's also going to give you that, I can play over the top. I don't have to get down in the box. I have range. I can come up from the box and make plays. You're going to see him play over the top and make some interceptions. You're seeing him roll in the cover three here to go over to the top. Disguised coverage, it was cover four at the snap. So if you saw his father and his high school tape from however many years ago, it would probably not be this good because he's a better version of his father. His father has taught him all the tricks, and it's like they're installed into a high school highlight tape. Top end speed looks good here. I think that's the only thing I wanted to really see is, could he get out and run and chase someone down from behind? But the physical stuff, the coverage ability, it's all on this film. I mean, it's a very complete body of work.
He's a no-risk player, in my opinion. That's the part of the NFL vibe that I hope everyone gets a standard. Like, this kid has thought he was going to do this his entire life. There's never been a day Gage Whittle's been alive that he didn't think this was happening. Does that make sense? Like, it's just implied in those households. And they have the genetic makeup usually.
I was going to say, when you said safe, I love that. When I get that feeling with a recruit, like, it's all here. It's safe. You know, maybe it's not David Gabriel George. Maybe it doesn't, you know, blow you away like that. But this kid will be in your lineup. He'll be one of your 11 starters. You'll count on him every week.
There's no limitations, like, from a scheme standpoint. It's not like he can't handle stuff. He's a quick learner, I bet. I mean, you have to assume that.
Yeah, I think that's with the definition of safe, Gage Whittle.
And even better, Google Eric Weddle, Michigan comments, Underwood. I'm giving you a lot of fun stuff to Google here. I guarantee you, if you don't know this story and you Google this, you will like it. The sky will actually be intact. Let's see here. Yeah, Mika, great. All right, people. Was that a good enough show to keep everybody driving on the road, between the lines, etc.? The sky is not falling. Glad we could show you that. Glad we could let you know that Mark loves to rub elbows with celebrities. He's got pictures of him and Michael Jordan and Shaq for next show. Guys, that's where he would leave, go and hang out there. And we'll have Garrick back. The gang will be all together. We'll even talk about running back targets. So the sky's intact. If you go outside tonight and you're in the Gem City or any nearby Ohio municipality, it's the nicest day of the year. Have a good one, Nutters of the Buck.